Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Off the ball on News Talk
106 to 108.
And we shall wonder if one day our game is played on the other planets. We will have interplanetary competitions.
Your job now is to stand by our new manager.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
If my granny had bought, you'd be my granddad.
Big Sam Aladicio, that's on it.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to the football show. It is Monaco nil, Juventus 2. Bakayoko's coming off.
Bakayoko, yeah. Martinho's coming on for him. He has been poor, actually, Bakayoko tonight. It's as poor as I've seen him all night, but I just think the one issue, the major issue that they've had tonight is the fullbacks. The fullbacks that have been so prominent for Monaco throughout this competition have been the downfall tonight. Out of position, not necessarily. And Osadibi is a fullback, but he's playing at left back. They are playing at right back. It hasn't suited Monaco at all tonight, and they've been exposed.
He's taken off Thomas Lamar, who's playing on the left wing as well. So he's gone for, he doesn't see this.
Yeah, Valère Germain's come on. It's basically an attack. He's gone three up front now. That's what it is. He's trying to try and force the issue here. But this is where Juve thrive. They'll love this. Bring more bodies on. We'll hit you on the counter. And they've been really good when they broke tonight. Dybala's been superb at times. Dani Alves, I've already had a text from Nathan Murphy telling me how Dani Alves was great for the first goal with the back heel. That was actually just prior to him setting up Higuain for the second goal as well. But he has looked excellent in the wing back as well tonight. Little responsibility defensively, yeah. And he's been able to get forward. He's looked good.
The ball for the second goal is a thing of beauty. Yeah, and the finish is brilliant.
Brilliant. The interception, I said, the baller makes interception, but once he gets his head up, the movement then does create it from Higuain. He makes Dani Alves his mind up for him, but as you say, he's got to hit that ball. It's a beautiful cross, and that was always, I always felt, would always catch Monaco out at some stage in this competition defensively. Two centre halves, they do get caught out, and they've been caught out quite poorly again tonight.
I was on News Talk Drive a little bit earlier on predicting that at least it would be more interesting and less one sided than last night, but that has not proved to be the case.
Yeah, they've had the chances, they've had a couple of moments in the game, and I do think missing Mendy tonight, it's a huge blow, because they've had to change things around personnel within that system, and it just hasn't worked for Leonardo Jardim, the coach.
Just goes to show being a good manager is really important at this level, or you can actually.
I do think so. I mean, I don't know, but Joel's in here, and I don't know, but I honestly, I've got a lot of respect for what Allegri's done tonight. I do, and so often we'll see coaches, and we spoke about it earlier, that coaches will literally just think, I'll tell you what, it's my way, we're going to play our way. But what Allegri's done tonight, he's changed the system. He's not necessarily weakening the side by bringing Barzagli in, but they've looked so good defensively. And any ball that come in, they thought, I'll tell you what, you put crosses in, yeah, I've just seen an elbow from Chiellini on Falcao as well.
Chiellini this evening has given a masterclass in how to foul, I'd guess, 10, 12 times, yeah, and not get a yellow.
You got a yellow for that, but like if it's a yellow, it's a red, right?
Yeah.
Accidental elbow into the opponent's face.
Yeah.
Who I was in full view of the whole time, referee. I agree totally about Juventus this evening. So like about January, when Allegri switched from 3 at the back to 4-2-3-1, and that was really good.
I think it was more down to Dybala. The form of Dybala probably dictated that. So he said, I'll get him in the side while playing Pjanic and Mandzukic a bit further forward, yeah.
And then you watch tonight, and all throughout the Champions League, it's been clear with Monaco, they're brilliant down the flanks. You've said several times they're the best crossing team that you've seen in an age. And you watch what's happened this evening, and quite often when you've ended down with the ball, they revert to 5-4-1 or 5-4-1 when I've been looking at it at times. And so they're doubling up down the flanks, and Monaco just can't get any fluidity. They can't get any crosses in.
And I think what they have said Joe.
But it's made it look desperately easy. Yeah. It's like literally their meeting as a management team before the game was Monaco good down wings. Let's put numbers down wings.
Well, it's not even. Do you know what it is, Joe? As well, it's more. I tell you what, we'll get three centre halves that will defend the width of the goal. So if you put crosses in, which they are going to put cross in, which they have done tonight, we'll get bodies in positions that will deal with it. And
can you only do that when you've got three brilliant centre backs who are Italian?
Not necessarily.
Would Chelsea's three be as good as this?
No, I don't think they're as good as those three as a trio, even as a pairing when it's usually Bonucci or and Chiellini. But no, I don't think that. But I think Chelsea have proved it, that you can actually change system. Tottenham have proved it across the course of the season as well. They've reverted to three at times.
And they've had Eric Dier as one of their three.
But the thing is, it's probably Monaco have just, they've probably had a game plan in this match. And Leonardo Jardim has said it. I remember him saying it before the City game specifically, saying, we won't change our style, we'll continue to play. And it seemed quite bold and brash at the time. And you're thinking, nah, he won't. He'll have to try and revert things, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
So they know what they're doing tonight.
There is a point, though, where you just can't defend crosses. Like, one of Monaco's best chances came when Durar hit in a cross for Mbappe and he volleyed at the near post and it had to be saved really well from Buffon. And that was a break. That was Juventus in possession, gave the ball away cheaply, and Monaco hit them quickly down the wings. And so they got the cross in.
Yeah.
But I would argue, like, I haven't seen Monaco play domestically, but in the games we've watched over the last number of weeks, there's no question Monaco have not got in even half as many crosses as previously. So you've got fewer crosses coming in because they've doubled up down the flanks. And then you've got the three boys in the middle eating up more than most of the other defences would. And suddenly Monaco are scoreless. And they don't have a plan B. Like, it's kind of been exposed tonight. I don't know, going through the middle, have they got midfielders?
They've tried to go long. They've tried to go long to Falcao. And they've got the three best central defenders, or two of the three best central defenders in world football, who are quite happy to go and battle man for man against your man, a long ball being played forward, put them off as the ball's being played forward into Falcao, as we saw with Chiellini's little elbow there. Yeah. Could have been sent off, yes, but...
Never is.
No.
Like, he knows exactly that. But it wasn't really on his chin, it was just on his neck, and so... It's going to be a little bit slow, and it's not going to be. My elbow's not going to be sore.
Didi Amand did a thing at halftime for RTE where he just picked out the array of Italian fouling and talked about how much he loved it, and thought it was just a joy to watch. Again, it's like anytime they get wrong side, anytime they're losing a one-on-one,
there's just
the slightest tug. Yeah. Referee goes, oh, it's just about a foul.
Or they'll take a booking if they have to. That's the other thing. Is it possible that with the crappy central defenders that they have, that Manchester City could have tried the same thing and would it have been successful?
Well, I think they could have been more defensively going out there. I honestly think, even if they're playing with the back four, you could actually say, well, I'll tell you what, let's see the first 25 minutes or 30 minutes of the game through. Let's sit as a back four, sit narrow, because that's what Atletico would have done. I'm not saying Atletico proved last night that maybe they're quite limited as well. They didn't really show too much defensively, but if Atletico have got a two-goal lead or a team that predominantly plays with the back four, even if it's Juve, and your manager wants to play that way, little tinker within that system and say, I tell you what, don't bomb forward. Just defend narrow. If the crosses are going to come in, at least we've got a back four in shape, in place. But what City did, they just went, I'll go forward. Three, four, five lads getting forward all the time. And that was where the problems arose. Sometimes it's kind of disrespectful, you think, to the opposition, because you think that our will and our players will always outplay you, and we'll get the better of you with what we've got. And Monaco proved that. You talked about Dortmund before, Jay, when Thomas Tuchel, the way that he played. I tell you what, we'll go toe for toe. We'll make this a really entertaining game. What happens? Monaco invariably have got that much pace. They're better than you at doing that, at playing that way.
And we're delighted, obviously, but Dortmund go out. That could have been a goal for Monaco.
There?
Yeah.
Yeah. They certainly, for whatever reason, they got in around behind Juventus down the flanks there. Juventus haven't created a ton of chances, we should say, as well.
Yeah.
Just they've been clinical with the ones they've managed.
They've looked good in the ball, though, John, haven't they? They've looked good.
Kept it brilliantly.
Yeah, they have. They've stifled the game. It's almost like
they must take the pace.
When you say
the
like, typical Italian performance. If you think of an Italian performance over the years, when they've gone away from home, they've got the job done, and they've got the goals. And as Joel said, they've just been clinical with the chance that they've had.
You mentioned Atletico Madrid. How disappointed were you with their performance last night?
Very, very, very disappointed with them. Griezmann wasn't in the game, and I think the best player who you felt the threat was going to come from was Carrasco. You felt if they were going to get anything from the game, he was the one that was going to provide it. So Griezmann technically was very good. I think his nice little touches around the middle of the pitch was quite good. Awareness was quite good. Just didn't have an effect on the game. And chance for Monaco. Kevin Gamero up front was poor, and I think that was largely down to the fact is that he had Varane back last night for Real Madrid. Varane alongside Sergio Ramos was just, they were just too dominant. And Atletico offered very little. They did have a couple of chances, a chance for Godin from a free kick, and half chance really for Gamero that was well saved from Keylor Navas. But other than that, they were disappointing. And that was disappointing how they defended in the game. Hernandez went right back, who's not a natural right back. I think he was exposed. I think the way that they played with Carrasco, with the way that they started the game as a left winger, Atletico, and Koke was tucked inside. as a narrow right midfielder. And all that did, it gave Toni Kroos the chance to switch play out to Marcelo on the left-hand side. He was bombing forward. And invariably, it was two-on-ones against Hernandez at times. And Hernandez struggled against both Ronaldo and against Marcelo. And that's where the really caused problems, I thought, for Atletico last night, Real Madrid.
Is that just Atletico's peak has passed and that team, you know, because we're talking about a manager here who renegotiated his deal shorter.
Yeah.
And who is at a club where consistently they've been punching way above their weight and have been moments from triumph in this very competition against that team. Was part of that psychological, or was it just that, as you've... Marcelo and Kroos are better than Hernandez and they pummel away at a weakness in the opposition. Was it less kind of psychological, more just we've got better players now?
I spoke here about Monaco with personnel, maybe a couple of injuries that's maybe affected them. I think the injury for Juan Fran last night, I think it affected Atletico, no doubt about that. But I thought they looked a little bit intimidated. You just said there, was it psychological? Mentally, it's almost as if they had the edge over them in the bigger games. They've got a great record, Atletico, at the Bernabeu. They've won some big games, particularly in La Liga. But when it's that big occasion, that big Champions League final, the big Champions League semis or whatever it will be, they just had the edge over them. And that was the disappointing thing watching Atletico, that they just couldn't quite get the better of them in that one big moment or that big match.
Kelly, you were saying last night that there's still plenty of life left in them.
Yeah, well, I was saying, does this feel like an end? Does Simeone look at this? Do some of the players look elsewhere when they've gone so close twice now, two finals, they've lost a quarter final to Real Madrid. They have won a league title together, so it's not like they haven't achieved something, and maybe they reach a point where they say, that was great, let's go to the next phase. And Kenny was saying no, he thought the age profile of the team is excellent.
Yeah, but
they weren't that far away in some respects, and injuries didn't help them, and they move into a new stadium next year and Simeone's committed to that transition. So he actually thinks they'll come again and it's not an end of an era moment. But he also pointed out he's not chatting on the phone with Diego Simeone every night.
Yeah, what do you think with Griezmann? It looks like he will leave.
See, that's a big one.
That is a big one for them. How do they replace him? It looks like Jan Oblak will leave. So how do they replace him? So you're going to lose two of your key players in the side.
It's fine. Yeah.
They do have an amazing track record of finding good strikers.
Yeah, well, that's a great point. You know, they lose Aguero, they lose Costa, they're able to replace them.
Torres,
aren't they?
All the way back
Torres,
to that.
Yeah. Like, so they do have a record at that. But what you would look at with it, though, and I know it's maybe easy thing to say. Sorry, that it did feel like it last night. It was almost as if we can't have that big moment.
Yeah.
And it just felt as though that's it. And it wouldn't surprise me if Simeone might think it might not be this season. It might be into next season. It might be after the transition to the new stadium. But just think.
Yeah. If podcast listeners are wondering why we haven't touched on Ronaldo and just the general brilliance of the stadium, we did all that earlier on the show. But I did want to ask you about the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So you go to a lot of English football and there's chanting and you have a real feel for that.
Yeah.
How does Atletico Real Madrid compare? Are they chanting at each other? Are there quiet spells? Like, how would you have described how it compares with an English game of that magnitude?
Well, Dave and I were there quite early, so we were there a good 3 or 4 hours before the game, actually. We just stayed around the game, stayed quite local, around the ground quite local. But once we got into the ground, we were in an hour and a half, 2 hours before the game easily. And Atletico fans had got into the ground early, so there was probably half their allocation. I think there were 6,000 Atletico fans there last night, so it was half their allocation there early, so they were very vocal an hour and a half before kickoff. That's where all the chanting was. And as the ground then filled up, Real Madrid then did take over. Once the game had started, the Atletico fans were drowned out. You could hardly hear them, and it was a constant flow of, you know, the noise was incredible. The banners, apparently spent fortunes on these two banners that depicted the two Champions League final wins that they've won over Atletico, just to rub it in the face as well. Apparently it translated as, "How do you feel when you see these two Champions League finals that we've won against you?"
Classy.
Yeah, it was, and the scenes at the start were excellent, and it continued throughout. I think it helped with the tempo that Real did set. They set a really good tempo to the game. Had a chance really early. Benzema had a couple of chances in the game himself. It could have been two or three at half time, and that's what maybe dictated or certainly created the atmosphere throughout the stadium, because it was amazing. It was an incredible game to go to. And when you see that man scoring a hat-trick and see the way that he played, there's no one better at doing what he's doing and having these big moments in big games. It was incredible to see.
Well, just have a listen to this.
It's a good cross from Ramos. It's all well here. And another chance, and this time they take it. And who else would it be? Only Cristiano Ronaldo. Marcelo, enough weight on the pass to find Benzema. Or Ronaldo trying to wriggle through. Ronaldo! Wonderful finish from the best finisher on the pitch. What a player this man is. And it's how he adjusts his feet, Dave, as well. Once he gets beyond the defender, waits for the bounce, adjusts his position, and then finishes it brilliantly. They're pouring forward now for Real Madrid. Ronaldo. Casemiro inside. Cruz wants it on the edge of the area. Vasquez. Lovely pullback. Ronaldo! Another hat-trick for the Real number 7.
Speaking of big moments and big games, are Dave having three there?
Yeah.
Dave, another hat-trick is insane.
He was about to say, from the best finisher
in world football history.
I can't say in the world. On the pitch. Yeah. It's a safer line.
He didn't want to get that abuse. He almost thought the abuse he'd get on Twitter if he said that, didn't he?
However, Phil Neville waded into this whole debate by saying that Pele and best, what my dad used to say, Ronaldo,
yeah,
is better than them.
Yeah, I think that was the piece that was on the BBC website today, wasn't it, from Phil. And he's come out all, he says he's the best. And he is slightly biased, but he's seen the work rate. He's seen what Cristiano Ronaldo has done to get himself to the position he's at now, where he has had to adjust his game. But we did see moments last night where we saw a little bit of the Ronaldo of old, getting out wide, the step-overs, manipulating the ball and beating defenders. We saw that a little bit from him, only briefly, but we did see it from him.
He also shielded a ball out for a goal kick at one stage, back on his own goal line. Like, what?
But Neville can't say he's better than Best or Pele.
No.
He hasn't seen them.
No.
He's seen YouTube.
Particularly Pele.
It's like, he says he's equal of Best and Pele. That's what
equal. I mean, he may well be, but
he
said
Best ever, though, which kind of, you know, you can't have three equal Best ever.
I heard a bit where he was talking about how at Carrington, there's a track about 2 miles long around Carrington, and every single day it was one of his many rituals, along with free kick practice and the gym and everything else. He would take the ball and he would do a lap of Carrington for the 2 miles, effectively practicing every trick he could every single day. He's like, this is just not normal level of drive. Most people would take a day off.
Mm. I was listening to Rennie Mullenstein a few weeks ago as well. Rennie Mullenstein's another one that takes quite a bit of praise for what Cristiano Ronaldo has done. But it was interesting enough to say that he said, I think he scored 25 goals in a season, and said, look, you should be scoring 40. And he showed him videos of his position when he gets to on the pitch, and he's almost stopped, he's static. And the one thing you can see now from him, particularly with that first goal last night, with... spoke about it earlier to you, Joe, wasn't it? Where he's in an offside position, the ball comes in. He knew exactly where he was, and he knows he's in an offside position. So if he goes and challenges for the ball, he'll be flagged offside. So he lets that phase of play go. He lets it play out. Then when the ball gets in a wide position to, is it Ramos that crosses the second one? It's not Ramos, is it? It was Casemiro, I think, wasn't it? And once he then just hits it into the ground and it bounces up into Ronaldo, he was the first one alert to it. He was the first one alert to the situation. He gets across Savic, and it's a brilliant header from him. And that is what you get from him. He knows exactly how now to get between the goals, constantly on the move, because he's watched himself and he's seen himself doing it time again, and time and time again thinking, I'm not on the move, I'm not going to get a goal here. And that's how he's getting the goals he is.
I think it was Neil Lennon, or it was one of the TV3 guys, the analysts, used the phrase sixth sense about where the ball is going to end up. And like, that was the, you know, it was like, he understands exactly. Remember that video when it was he was blindfolded?
Oh yeah, they did a thing on Sky where, I mean, I it was very impressive, right? But I don't think it's unique to footballers, because I think you all have this going on in your brains. But they would do things like, he'd be in the penalty area waiting for a cross, and they'd have the lights on, and they would allow him to see the corner kick taker make contact with the ball, and then the lights would go off as soon as the ball was kicked, and the next thing you'd hear would be a thump and the net rustling. They would turn back on the lights and show you what had happened with cameras that worked in the dark, and Ronaldo had sweetly volleyed the ball into the net. Now, like, I appreciate that's very special, but I actually would back a lot of you guys to be able to do that, because I think when you see a player kick a ball, you can judge the spin on it, the pace on it, the flight on it very, very quickly.
I don't know.
Do you not think so?
Maybe. I don't know.
Let's do our own. No, we should put Kevin Gilvan through exactly the same test.
We should do, yeah.
But the, I think the point was that from Ronaldo's, he's faster at it than everybody else.
Like
if all the defenders can do the same stuff, then they'd always be getting there at the same time as him. But he just seems to be able to.
I mean, if you saw his goal at the weekend as well, Danny Carvajal wasn't it, that crossed it. And it was his movement. Was it Valencia he played on Saturday? And the movement that he has, he just drags the defender out of position. And what he does with the defender, if you ever watch him, you maybe study him a bit closer as well when you see it. So the defender, what you would always say, which Monaco struggled with tonight, defenders with the shoulders open, particularly Sidibe, because he struggled playing on the left-hand side. And I always found that if I ever played on the right-hand side, struggled to get my positional sense right if the ball was coming over my right shoulder, because it just felt a bit strange turning.
You're no Dennis Irwin, you're telling us.
Yes, totally no Dennis Irwin, yeah. I once asked to play right side centre-half and I had an absolute nightmare. I've never been a centre-half anyway, never been a defender, but I asked to play in that position and I had a nightmare because the diagonal balls played over my shoulder. The attacker would always have the run on you straight away. So what Ronaldo does, though, Ronaldo, like, he pulls away. So when the defender then he's got to turn, if he's a good defender, shoulders up and be able to see both of you. But as soon as then he looks back at the ball, Ronaldo's gone. So Ronaldo automatically has that 1 or 2 yards or half a yard on a centre-half. So when that cross comes in, he's up and he's jumping.
Kenny's made that exact point last night. The worst thing you want, for any young footballer listening out there, if you're an attacker, as a defender, if there's a cross coming in out there and then this forward is slightly behind you on your shoulder, you're trying to look at two things, it's a nightmare.
Do you know what the only way I would probably suggest you could stop it is actually go and stop him in the run. Don't actually stop go him. But that means you lose flight of the ball, so if he gets away from you, so you've almost got to just go and lean into him, stop the run, and then that's maybe the way to stop
it. Kenny was slightly dismissive of how he kind of thinks, well, look, Ronaldo has always had this level of movement, and maybe he has, but like, you know the way a really good looking person doesn't need to develop personality? Quite often the really speedsters with tricks up their sleeve, like Ronaldo as a 17-year-old, they don't need to develop intelligence. As great ball in from Monaco just goes wide. They don't need to develop intelligence and movement because from the age of 5, they've been faster than everyone and they've had tricks. So that's all they need. That gets them all the way. They're the Theo Walcotts of the world, Raheem Sterlings. Mm. They don't have to develop game intelligence. So like that Ronaldo is playing like Gerd Müller just blows my mind. When did you learn this?
Yeah, I'm with you.
You never learned this at 18.
I'm with you.
You never learned it at 25. You shouldn't be this good at playing this type of football.
Well, look at his goals that he was getting in. Look at the positions he was getting into to actually score the goals. He wasn't getting those positions.
No.
He was quite happy. If you ever watched Ronaldo, wanted the ball to his feet constantly. He wanted the ball at his feet so he could go and take the piss out of the defender, mock him, you know, nutmeg him, trick him, whatever he would do. That's what he wanted to do. All of a sudden now, he's not doing that. He's moving off the ball into space because he wants the ball played through to him to get a goal. That's his priority now on a pitch. It's not to make a defender look foolish. It's to actually go and score that goal, and that's the difference with
him. Like the final part of this very long Ronaldo appreciation society for the last decade is now realising, on top of everything else, he's an unbelievably intelligent footballer.
And a student of the game.
Yeah, student, all that stuff. Like, really deep thinker about it.
Pjanic has just been subbed off there. There's 2 minutes left. Juve are going to see this out now. But he did that thing that must annoy the opposition so much. He goes over and he kind of high fives the referee. And like, come on, off you go. But can't actually book him now because they've become friends. It's like, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's really horrible. You're like, oh, you sleazeball.
Yeah.
2-0 to Juventus against Monaco. Have we done enough on Cristiano Ronaldo loving? Like, there's no sign of this stopping.
Guess not.
I was talking about that interview he did, and they played a bit of it out this morning, and he's just intent on breaking all the records. Like, it's a thing that he has in his head.
Yeah, what was it, 399 goals for Real Madrid? That is just phenomenal. Mm. You're probably looking at it now, it's nigh on 600 career goals, including Man United goals and international goals. You know, we were talking about players earlier on who've got that sort of appearances. He's got that in goals. It's just absolutely incredible. Amazing.
And the other thing is Zidane has rested him in a lot of games.
Yeah.
So clearly knows exactly when to push the buttons. So maybe they can just keep going for another couple of seasons.
Well, the way that he is, how fit he looks. He still looked quick last night. Get him right for the bigger games towards the end of the season and you'll get the best out of it.
Oh,
chance for Glick there.
Juve,
they've been on top, Monaco, the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't know, is it age kicking in a little bit, but they'll count themselves a bit unlucky now not to have scored one.
I think every chance they've had tonight, I know Buffon will get a lot of credit because he'll probably come out and say he's made 9 saves tonight, 9 or 10 saves, but the chances that Monaco have had, they've gone straight at him.
Yeah.
And they've been saves that
Falcao had won, was straight out of the
He would make
second half.
Those saves because of the quality that he's got. He's never really been tested out wide and really caused, caused too many problems. Yes. Oh,
that's brilliant from Chiellini. It's just watching, out of interest, just watching his big bald head there the whole time as the cross was about to come in. His marker lost him about three times and he just reefed him back.
Yeah.
So, and then the Chiellini got the ball there when it came in.
It is.
Juve have now passed the 600 minutes of Champions League football without conceding a goal. Oh, pretty impressive, isn't it?
It is. And I do fancy them. I do really fancy them. I think if Real get to the final, I think they'll have more than enough to take Real.
Are Real Madrid a good team in the context of potentially double Champions League winners and another one in 2014 and going to win La Liga this year? I remember watching the Champions League final last year thinking, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And yes, obviously they must be amazing.
Well, they've got him, haven't they? They've got him. Yeah. I thought Toni Kroos was the best player in the
pitch. You were raving about him in the office earlier.
I thought Kroos was absolutely brilliant last night. I really did think that. And Modric was good alongs, but Kroos was just incredible.
Also, Marcelo,
he really was.
Marcelo has been ridiculous over the last 2 months.
Yeah, but they're not one of the great teams.
They're not a Barcelona from 5 years ago, are they? They're not. You don't get that sense when you're watching them that whenever they're in possession, they are going to just carve a team open. You don't get that sense. But
a lot of very kind of iffy performances all through La Liga where they keep winning this season. You know, unconvincing is the word from Spain.
There was a bit of criticism you've seen Ian over there last night for Gareth Bale. One or two supporters saying that they're not happy with him, always injured. They'd rather see him play Isco, who Isco played well last night. He had to take him off because it looked like he was going to get sent off. And Asensio then came on and looked good when he's played this season. He's looked good. He certainly looked good in the El Clasico. So, no, they're not...
It's a difficult question to answer because they're clearly not a they're clearly brilliant.
They've got superb players, haven't they? Of course they have. But I don't think they're at a level at a Barca 5 years ago. No, I don't think that.
Is it only 15 months with Zidane? Is that right?
Yeah. Like, his record is unbelievable as well.
It's just unbelievable.
It is an amazing record.
I'd retire at the end of the season if I see him go.
And apparently as well, there was one or two supporters last night you were getting chatting to. We were talking to you, the press lad, not happy with Zidane, not happy with him tactically. Doesn't feel as though he can do that set of players want to learn tactics? Because apparently Benitez was working on tactics with the side, and Ronaldo just said, "Hey, we're not having this boy. Get him out the door now as quick as you can. We don't want this guy."
Is that what they were saying last night?
That's what they were saying. Yeah.
Wow.
So you've got Ronaldo that you can imagine runs the gaff, and you want him, he's got to, basically the manager that comes in has got to pander to his needs, and that's the way it is.
And only Zidane, and like, there aren't many other managers in world football who can come in and have a conversation with Ronaldo and go, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
because I won the World Cup and scored twice in the final.
Yeah.
Alright, it's finished there, 2-0, the final score. Juve have pulled a Juve and they've beaten Monaco in Monaco this evening, so it's very, very long way back now for Monaco in the second leg next week. We're going to take a quick break and get the thoughts of Pat Nevin, who is in Galicia next.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sport.
To Vigo in Galicia next, and Pat Nevin is on the line. Pat, good evening to you.
Good evening. As I just put about calamari in my mouth.
Very nice.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, it's very, very nice. Yeah, very good. Very nice round here, it has to be said. It's not absolutely mob with Manchester United fans yet, but I suspect tomorrow there will be plenty.
Yeah, always good to get in early and sample a bit of the local cuisine. The Monaco-Juve game, I hope you got a chance to see most of it there. But one of the stereotypically brilliant Juve away from home in a big knockout European football kind of... If you were to write the template of it, that's what it would look like.
Yeah, but slightly more positive than you would generally put them in the past. I mean, they've got the BBC at the back, you know, and Benicio Bazzagli, Chiellini. But I have to say, I thought Monaco made a whole bunch of chances, and it kept on being the same sort of thing. They were sweeping balls in from the right and the left between the centre back and Buffon, and just Falcao just couldn't get on the end of them. And part of that was because, you know, the intelligence of the Italian defenders to give a little nudge, a little tug, a little pull here and there. But I was surprised at how many half chances Monaco did create. But, the genius of the Italians, they somehow, if you get by those three in the defence, you still got to get by Buffon as well. And they couldn't do it tonight. Although, I have to say, I thought Monaco played well. But certainly Juve, the better side, And on top of that, I'm sure you've seen the first goal. It was genius, wasn't it?
Well, the first goal was superb, Pat. The one thing I looked at tonight, which I actually really admired what Allegri did. So often you and I will be on here and we'll talk about the coaches and how they set up and with just a mindset of, oh, it's our way and that's it. We're quite happy with that. But Allegri changed the system tonight, goes back to the five, and it took away a lot of what Monaco had, when we know that the best part of the game was always the wide areas and the amount of crosses that they got into the area. So they flooded the central areas if crosses came in, and they put two wing-backs in place that tried to force the full-backs back, and it was a masterclass when you're looking at it like that from a tactical point of view.
Well, when you think about it, he doesn't often play those three at the back anymore.
No.
I mean, now and again he'll play them, but he doesn't, and they have been brilliant together as a three at the back in the past. But I don't know if you noticed, I had a look on the UEFA website before the game, and they had it written out as a four at the back.
Yeah.
So Barzagli is the right back. And I looked at it and thought, yeah, sure, no chance. And there wasn't. It was absolutely three at the back. And you've got Dani Alves going up one side. And you know, and it worked an absolute treat. And particularly, as you say, in that first goal, I mean, flying up that right wing, and the two back heels. So, they've got three at the back, but they have five at the back when they need it. But those two wing backs, I mean, once again, they were massive and they made a big difference tonight. But of course, there was one moment I laughed out loud when that first goal goes in, and I'm loving the Dybala little back flick and the Dani Alves back heel pass, which was brilliant. He go in, has basically got a tap in, and he runs away as if he's done all the hard work. You just finished it off, mate. That's all you did.
That's what goal scorers do, though, Pat, isn't it? Eh?
I know. They take all the glory, but you know, I mean, to be fair, he's done incredibly well. And if you look at it tonight, Falcao's been brilliant this season. I mean, I don't know about yourselves, but I didn't think Falcao would get it back. I never thought Falcao would be playing the semi-final of the Champions League game again after what he did at Chelsea, or what he didn't do at Chelsea and what he didn't do at Manchester United. But he's done really well. But if there's a shootout between Higuain and Falcao tonight, well, we know who won.
I presume for that first goal, Pat, the Alves back heel, he's just putting it into an area. He doesn't know for sure what's going on behind him.
That's a great question. It's a really good question because, you know, there are sometimes when you play, and I think we've chatted about this before, when you basically have 360 knowledge of everything that's around you. You just see yourself in that moment. And, you know, we always talk about the fact that your messes are always in that moment or in that moment most of the time. But now and again, as a player, you just kind of get it. You know where everything is. It's all going in slow motion. So I think the likelihood is he's just put it into an area. But it seemed, I know why you're asking, because it looked quite deliberate, didn't it?
Mm.
The way he did it. And, you know, if he turned around and said, by the way, I meant that, and I knew where he was, I don't think I'm arguing against him in this one.
Yeah, Pat, two things we've touched about here, we've touched on two games, two managers in particular, that the last two rounds at Monaco have played in this competition, and the reluctancy to change things. I've touched on it a little bit there, but we speak about constantly about two, or perceived to be two of the greatest coaches in Europe, in Guardiola and Thomas Tuchel. Yet Allegri in there tonight has changed the system. He's then tried to nullify the threat. So does this question Guardiola, does it question Tuchel and their inability to actually change things and actually try and change a match, particularly with Man City, because with that two-goal lead that they had going over there, why didn't Guardiola change things around and play, just tinker with his own mindset a little bit and his own system a little bit and try and nullify what Monaco had going forward?
Oddly enough, I think the two coaches that have changed in different ways, not massively, just a little bit of, I hesitate to use the word tinkering because I'm talking about Italians here. But, you know, when they've known something has to be adapted slightly, they've done it and it's worked out. Now, Allegri definitely is one of them. And the other one, obviously, is Antonio Conte.
Yeah.
And you've got to say, Allegri's really impressive the way he's done it. Because it kind of has worked almost every single time. They're absolutely cruising at Scudetto. It's going to be theirs, there's no doubt about that. And then you're looking at the Champions League now, and you're watching that tonight, and I know it's only the first leg, but I mean, I'm actually putting them favourites just above Real Madrid just now because of the way they play and because of the options that they've got just now and because of the coach. And I have heard a number of people say from various areas, I mean, they loved Antonio Conte over in, you know, Juve, and they loved what he did with the Italian national squad, they like Allegri better. They actually think he adds more. And if you ask Juve fans just now, they would probably stick with him if they had the choice of the two. So, you know, two Italian coaches, and the subtleties of the changes have been absolutely brilliant. And I think, you know, is it a negative towards Pep, or is it a positive towards those two coaches have actually got it really right this year?
I think the question is then, Pat, why don't the Premier League sides do it? Why doesn't Arsene Wenger do it over the years? Why hasn't he been able to adjust his system or adapt the system? Why hasn't Guardiola done it? Why do they not do it within the Premier League?
Don't you ask the question about those two guys, and it's no surprise you ask about those two guys, because, you know, Arsenal were a kind of a mini Barca. They tried to be a mini Barca. And they know, or Arsene has known what he wants and how he wants to do it. Now, he's tried a back three a couple of times recently. You know, it's pretty late on, and it seems almost desperation the way he's tried to do it. But that's very much in the Pep way. You know, it's almost, I kind of would like to win, but I want to be beautiful first. And I can admire that, I have to say. I like it. But it won't get you the top jobs for very long, and it won't keep you in them, because people want, you know, the owners are hard-nosed businessmen and they want to win things. But certainly, as I would put Arsene and Pep in the same category, and I would put Allegri and Conte in the same category, as in they're much more down to earth. They're much more, look, we will find a way of winning and we don't care what it looks like.
So we touched on the brilliant aspects of Juve's performance going forward and five at the back and packing the defence and stopping Monaco out wide. The other key reason we touched on as to why Monaco lacked fluidity was the Italian players' brilliant ability to foul repeatedly and not get booked. And even you, Pat, must admire the genius of their fouling.
You know, I was thinking about it. I was at the game, the Everton-Chelsea game at the weekend, and I watched Hazard being man-to-man marked by Idrissa Gueye. And I was watching it, and I kept on thinking, yeah, you've just about marked him out of the game because you've fouled him probably 40 or 50 times off the ball.
Yeah.
And because we're not used to it in the British game of seeing that fouling off the ball, he got away with it. But the Italians are so much more sophisticated than it. They know how to do it at the right times with a nudge and a tug. And they would never be so outright and obvious as the way it's been done, you know, are trying to be done in the Premier League now and again, generally against Eden Hazard. But you watch them do it, and it's a nudge. And there was a couple of times, there was one particular time in the second half, it was about 65, 70 minutes. The ball was played in beautifully again. Falcao was running onto it. And the way that Chiellini made it look as if he didn't mean to nudge him was genius. And yes, I have to agree, I did admire it. At heart. But there's a bit of me that we're allowed to be biased. And it's a bias that goes back to when Celtic played Juventus in Champions League a few years back. And their marking was like thuggish. And that wasn't admiration, that was just thuggishness. This time it was just a little bit more subtle. And they knew exactly what to do. And you've got to be able to find a way around it. And they just couldn't tonight.
One last question for you, Pat. What's going to happen in tomorrow night's game?
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, tonight, Jose was trying to throw that line again that he's struggling for a team. Rubbish. His team looks absolutely superb. There are plenty of great, good enough players to win that game. He's got so many options. I'm sat tonight trying to figure out what team he'd play. And you know what? He's probably, because Mata is back, you know, it looks like Jones is back. It looks like Smalling might be back. Actually, it looks like Bailly might be a back and available as well. And I start looking at that group, and for all the complaints about people not being fit, actually there's plenty there. Oddly enough, you can't take much from Celta's last game because they played basically a shadow side in the last game. And also, they've kind of thrown it away in the cup over here as well. I think they're going to have to go out and have a go at it tomorrow, and I think they will have a go at it. And I think that will suit Manchester United. And it's not often I say this, but I think if he plays Rashford up front, I think Manchester United will probably go and win this game.
All right, Pat, great stuff. We'll talk a bit more about that game soon. Thanks a million for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Pat.
Pleasure, guys.
Tom Dawn is here. Good evening to you.
Good evening.
How are you?
Nervous, I'd say.
Tom just missed what Pat said, so he...
I heard the most of it. And he was saying these lots of players coming back and he's very confident. I don't know.
You're going to win,
quite
he
sure says. That. But yeah, you saw Swansea at the weekend. They still stumble, don't they? They still don't look very convincing, but you know. It's nice to have something to be nervous about this time of the
That's
year.
That's true, yeah. It's been unusual the last couple of seasons.
Yes. Tonight, looking back on the music that was popular the last time Spurs were ahead of Arsenal. 95.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant year for music.
Oasis.
Oasis, yeah. Britpop at its peak.
Mm-hmm. Wonderwall.
I was reading the tables there. See, you know, I was expecting to see Spurs were second or third that year. They weren't. They were seventh, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, it was the Arsenal that bad.
Arsenal were ninth or tenth or something.
Oh, is that right?
Last Bruce Rioch season, was it?
Because I saw this, like, there's been a lot of these nostalgia pieces. Dumb and Dumber and Braveheart were the big box office smashes.
The world has changed so dramatically since then. You know, you don't really see it going until...
John Major's.
Yeah, the price of a pint, 160.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
John Major was getting turfed out, though.
Yeah, that was like...
Yeah, he didn't last long.
That was a bad time for him.
Yeah, I've also discovered a lost Radiohead track ahead of the release of OK Computer. They did this track called The Lift during this tour they were on with... Alanis Morissette in the UK, in
what?
America. Yeah.
What?
They opened for Alanis Morissette for 30 stadium shows.
What?
I know.
Alanis Morissette was huge in 95.
Yeah.
And they had the song The Lift, and it was going down so well that they thought if they released it, it would take the album in too commercial a direction.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just have footage of it from one of those gigs. It's brilliant.
Do you ever think, though, that's... Come on.
I don't know. I can't imagine him being that confident to take your best song and not put it on the album because you think it's going to be too commercial. That is just...
It worked out okay for them, though.
Yeah.
I know.
They probably did quite well after that, yeah.
It did go quite well for them after that. There's no question about that. They were very close to being a big hair band. After the first album, they toured America and Tom York had...
After Creep.
Mad dyed blonde hair. And they looked like an American rock band. And then they kind of said, what are we doing? What direction are we going here? They pulled it back. So the song is great, though. I'll have that. And there's loads of great stuff going around. Gorillaz album is brilliant. Have you heard Gorillaz?
Yeah.
Oh, it's excellent. Yeah.
Everybody's raving about it.
Yeah, very, very good. Damon Albarn was a genius. I have to admit it.
All the way back to 1995.
Yeah.
He was there as well.
There you go.
And if a kid walked up to you in 95 and said Oasis or Blur, Tom, what would you say?
I would have said Oasis.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I just love the excitement of Oasis.
Yeah, all day.
They were get off your seat and go crazy. I know people, I wasn't out there myself, they played a little small venue, the Tivoli, and I met Pat, a friend of mine who'd been at it, and he just said it's the best gig he's ever been at in his life, and he reckons he'll never be to a better gig. And I'd say if we stopped him now, he'd say the same thing.
I was Oasis at the time, but I feel like Blur won the war. I feel like Blur won the war.
I
think in the long run they have so many moments and Damon has done some great stuff and then
I saw them the main raw gig, the famous main raw gig was at 96, I think, just got promoted with Preston North End. What a time it was.
What a time to be alive.
It was, and honestly and I was at that gig, it was just absolutely incredible. Amazing.
But then look at Blur at Nebworth, how many years later? Was it Glastonbury?
It's great, but if you wanted to get some
Oasis at Nebworth, Joe.
Yeah, sorry.
Nebworth was Oasis.
Oasis are an event.
Yeah, sorry, Glastonbury.
They're an event. They were just wildly exciting. They were fantastic.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, this Blur may be slightly more cerebral.
It's that Best versus Ronaldo argument here we're having.
It is a bit, isn't it?
No. There's no comparison here.
I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after these.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sport.
The top 100 tracks from the UK album chart, sorry, the UK single charts for 1995. Number 10, Robson and Jerome, I Believe, Up on the Roof.
Yeah.
That's JP's favourite. Number 9, Simply Red, Fairground.
That's Tommy Rooney's favourite, yeah.
Number 8, Take That Back for Good, which is acceptable.
Number seven, that's a phenomenal tune.
Number 7, Michael Jackson, You Are Not Alone. Ooh. 6, Rednecks, Cotton Eye Joe.
That's a Richie McCormack, sorry, that one.
Cotton Eye Joe actually makes me break out in a rash.
Yeah.
Oh. 5 is Coolio, Gangsta's Paradise. 4 is the Out Here Brothers, Don't Stop, in brackets, Wiggle Wiggle. Number 3 is the Out Here Brothers, Boom Boom Boom.
Oh. I Want You in My Room, that one.
No, Boom Boom Boom, let me hear say J-O. J-O.
Oh, well, that's fine.
It's not, it's terrible.
It's fine.
It's awful. Number 2, Robson and Jerome, Unchained Melody / White Cliffs of Dover.
Yeah, another tune.
And number 1, Celine Dion, Think Twice.
Oh, come on.
But is it any better now? I mean, we were just saying there, Ed Sheeran
but at
will
least,
be numbers 1, 2, 4 and 6.
At least in the background there. Well, that's for the whole year. At least in the background. That was quick.
Oh.
It's like a bad slow set in Pedigree Corner on a Friday night when everybody's too blitzed even though nobody's 18.
Kev, I would say you were up to no good to this song at disco. Absolute filth. Who's that in the corner with Kilban, they said?
I would have gone to the little grunge club or something like that, mate. Just get one of the...
I'd say you were all over this.
Oh, come
95,
on.
What age were you?
18.
Oh, dear God.
Preston's close enough to Manchester to go out somewhere good, though, right?
I would have gone over to my here and there. I was dedicated young boy then, Jer. Dedicated young boy.
Nice. You can still go out.
Yeah. Yeah, once every
Saturday
so
nights.
Often, yeah. I was on 25 quid a week or something.
We were all in school getting nothing.
I'd say you were ruthless. Sweep in for the slow set.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Any projection going on
here? I was
here?
A shy boy.
Hi, I'm Kev. Play for Preston.
Oh dear.
No. That's poor, isn't it?
I don't even know what our airtime is here. I'm just... we're just hanging in the wind here.
Oh, it is, yeah.
We've got a minute left.
I have got a tweet, actually. I've got a tweet. Someone sent me a tweet in earlier as well. It's Noel @GoalFrank. He said to me, where was Ronaldo during the recent game against Barcelona, Ken, when it was a Messi show yet again? So that was the one in relation to Ronaldo being great or Ronaldo being better in any sort of way than Messi. But I don't think we actually did make that point, but we were talking in relation to Pele and George Best. But there you go. There you go, yeah.
Can't please everyone, Kevin.
No, I know.
Tom Dunne just tweeted us saying, I better point out I'm going to be working off a different list to the Off the Ball boys. That's good, because his list might have some good music on it. At least in the background when that crap was being played on the radio wall to wall, there was the Oasis and Blur.
That was the start of it. That was around the start of it, so it was great times.
But I'm sure there's equally good music being made today. It's all being kept a secret. Mm. Right, that's pretty much all we've got time for tonight. We'll talk with John Giles tomorrow. We're going to bring you... feature length Aisling Thompson interview. We've got Billy Vinopola or Mako. Billy Vinopola. And we'll also talk with Gordon Taylor of the PFA on the football show. That's all on tomorrow night's show. Tom Dunne is up next. Sounds like it's going to be a cracker. We'll see you then. Good luck.
Get my ball and the out of grass.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.